The next case for argument this morning is numbers 063678 and 063768, the United States against Fuller and Johnson. Mr. Kaplan.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Time and again, this Court has held that a mere buyer-seller relationship does not equal a conspiracy. In particular, this Court in Thomas N. Rivera reversed a jury's verdict finding conspiracy when the evidence showed that nothing more than a buyer-seller relationship existed. Your Honors, the undisputed facts of this case parallel the holdings in Thomas N. Rivera and call for the same result, because as this Court held in Rivera, a conspiracy conviction is not a simple substitute for a drug distribution conviction. No matter how overwhelmingly the government showed defendants' participation in drug sales, that does not automatically show his agreement to join in a further crime. In this case, Your Honors, the government offers labels, but what really counts are facts. Of the 12,000 recorded phone calls, only 39 had anything to do with Fuller, and of those 39 calls, only 6 reference identifiable buy-sell transactions, 4 from Bew to Fuller, and 2 from Fuller to Bew. Further, the government admits that Fuller was not a part of the inner circle of this conspiracy. Fuller was a small-time member of the conspiracy who did not share in any profits and had no communication with any member of the charged conspiracy except for Bew. He was merely a customer, and a small-time one at that.
Isn't it possible that there were two conspiracies here that Mr. Bew was part of? One with his so-called inner circle, and maybe he was involved in another conspiracy with Mr. Fuller.
Well, absolutely, Your Honor, that is possible, but this Court has looked at 6 factors to determine whether a simple buyer-seller relationship moves into the realm of conspiracy, and those factors simply are not met here. The government attempts to put labels on these conspiracy factors and take instances from the trial court to show that these factors are met. But in the end, the undisputed evidence at the trial court shows that, like in Thomas and in Rivera, Bew and Fuller communicated and engaged in what was a short-term, inconsistent, irregular series of deals that fails to move the relationship from a buy-sell into the realm of conspiracy. None of the factors that this court uses to determine whether a buy-sell relationship enters the realm of conspiracy are dispositive, but they do function together as a collective test that must show a concrete interlocking interest between the individual buy-sell transactions. And Rivera and Thomas show that despite the difficulty of overcoming the sufficiency of the evidence standard, when that evidence does not show a concrete interlocking interest, this court will overturn conspiracy convictions, and that is clearly the case here. I'd like to call your attention directly to one of the factors, which is fronting. The government labels the sporadic transactions in this case as involving fronting. But again, Your Honors, the label of fronting is no substitute for the analysis of a transaction. This court has used the rationale to establish fronting as a factor, that fronting can reflect a high degree of trust and unity between individuals and indicate an investment in a stable, lasting relationship. But this court has never held that all sales on credit are a per se conspiracy. The fronting must show a substantial degree of trust and partnership rather than isolated and sporadic transactions. And in this case, any so-called fronting between Fuller and Bew does not suggest a reliable, cooperative relationship. In fact, it is just the opposite. The facts in the lower court show that at one point Fuller owed Bew $3,500 for an unspecified transaction. And within 7 to 10 days, Your Honors, replete with an uninterrupted trail of Bew phoning Fuller and harping on him for the money, the debt was paid. This clearly evidences Bew's discomfort with the debt and his lack of trust in Fuller. Further, and even more importantly, Your Honors, every other case in front of this court involving fronting was affirmed not merely because fronting existed, but because the fronting involved either highly organized street gangs, defendants who were high-powered suppliers or managers in a conspiracy, or running of massive amounts of drugs or weapons. And this case has none of those hallmarks. And for those reasons, the mere fact that there is an instance of fronting is not enough to establish a conspiracy, especially considering none of the other factors are met. And another factor that this court does weigh heavily on is trust between co-conspirators. Again, the government places a label on the trust between Fuller and Bew, but boiling it all down, what we have are facts that show nothing but complete distrust between Fuller and Bew. It is important to note that Bew regularly cheated Fuller by selling him re-rocked cocaine to further his own profits. And Bew testified repeatedly that Fuller was, quote, his own man, and that the two did not share any suppliers or customers, and that Fuller was not a part of the inner circle of the conspiracy. Also, Your Honors, Bew constantly harped on Fuller to pay even the smallest of debts. And this court held in Thomas, and one of the most important parts of the holding in Thomas, is that because two parties have no commitment to each other, no trust is established. And there was clearly no commitment between Fuller and Bew, or between Bew and Fuller. Also, in Rivera, this court held that the government failed to show that trust existed between the defendant and the co-conspirator based solely on the fact that the defendant paid for drugs at first and received the drugs later. And in Rivera, Your Honors, those transactions totaled over $80,000 in cash and cross-country travel to obtain the drugs, facts that are not on the record here. Again, it is important to note that other conspiracy cases show deep levels of trust between co-conspirators, evidenced by intricate webs of personnel running drugs, running weapons, controlling neighborhoods, and dealing with large amounts of cash with care and precision, and that could not be further from the case here. This court also looks at the length of the affiliation or prolonged cooperation between the parties to determine whether a conspiracy exists. The government again uses labels and generalizations like multiple occasions and numerous to describe the contract and the contact and the transactions between Bew and Fuller in an attempt to show prolonged cooperation. As previously mentioned, only 39 calls over 2 months of wiretaps. Six of those 39 calls discuss specific drug transactions, and this court has reversed conspiracy convictions where the length of the cooperation was even longer and the transactions more numerous. In Thomas, seven transactions over 10 weeks was not enough. In Rivera, four transactions, large amounts of cash and drugs, were not enough to affirm a conspiracy conviction. Your Honors, the government charged Bew with a conspiracy that began in 2000 and ended in July of 2003. Yet Bew testified that he didn't even know Fuller or deal with him until March of 2003, which is a 4 to 5 months of a total relationship.
Did you have any problem with the instructions that were given in this case?
No, Your Honor. We had no trouble with the instructions, nor did we raise.
Your problems with the jury and their determination that those things you just described actually did occur.
Absolutely, Your Honor. It is the sufficiency of the evidence and standard that we have to overcome here. But the larger point here is what the government does with the facts in this case. They put labels on these factors of conspiracy and say, yes, there was fronting, but doesn't meet the rationale this court has used for fronting. Yes, there was trust, they say, but it doesn't meet the rationale this court has used and why it's so important that co-conspirators have trust with each other in order to show that conspiracy is a group crime and why it's a more dangerous crime than an individual drug trafficking charge.
Didn't the jury specifically find that Fuller was responsible for over 500 grams?
Yes, Your Honor. The jury did find that he was responsible for over 500. Yes, specifically. Yes, Your Honor.
And how would you suggest that he would overcome that specific jury finding?
If this court, in the face of that overwhelming evidence against conspiracy, affirms that conspiracy conviction, our argument is that Fuller's case should be remanded for resentencing because the drug amount is not supported by reliable evidence. Again, the government takes a couple of transactions, pastes them together.
Did the jury find it reliable?
Yes, Your Honor. The jury did find it reliable.
How do we overturn the jury verdict?
Well, very simply, Your Honor. Isn't
that a high burden?
It's a very high burden, absolutely, but what's important is that the drug amount cannot be found with, there has to be a sufficient indicia of reliability. And what we found by going through the calls, as well as by tracking the amounts of drugs that changed hands, as well as by tracking Bew's testimony in court, that there is just no way, even if you take the most conservative estimate, as the jury must do, that he could possibly have reached 500 grams. If there's no other questions, I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kaplan. We'll hear now from Mr. DeWalt.
May it please the court, Ron DeWalt on behalf of the United States. The jury was given the buyer-seller instruction. It was argued at trial, and the jury rejected that. The factors in that instruction all show that the jury's verdict was rational. All the factors here point towards a conspiracy relationship between Bew and Fuller. First, there was a prolonged cooperation between the two. He testified that this happened since starting in March of 2003, some 2.5 months prior to the wiretap. So it lasted at least 4.5 months. And that there was transactions approximately once a week or once every other week. The wiretaps corroborate that. And then looking at all the different calls, you see the pattern that existed. Bew called Fuller, asked if he needed some cocaine. Fuller called Bew, told him that he needed cocaine. Bew then went to buy the cocaine from the supplier, brought it back to Fuller, and then Bew called Fuller to collect the money later. And then the whole cycle starts again. The second factor, the sales on credit. This wasn't one single incident where there was on credit. Bew testified that usually they extended credit. Fuller purchased cocaine from Bew either on full or partial credit. And the trust was that Fuller would pay it back at a later time. The third factor, the knowledge of the resale. Bew knew exactly what Fuller was doing with his cocaine. Bew had conversations with Fuller about how the customers liked the cocaine and when can I expect the money back? Have you finished selling that cocaine? The fourth factor, that shared stake. Bew needed the proceeds from the Fuller sales in order to go back to his supplier to buy more cocaine in order to sell it back to Fuller. That's the interlocking interest. And that's the driving fact, that Bew's and Fuller were agreeing together to sell that cocaine to Fuller's customers, to distribute that cocaine through the in and around the city streets of Joliet. The wiretap corroborates this critical fact, and this where Bew was calling Fuller saying, I got to go back to my guy, but I don't have the money. Are you done selling yet? I'll wait for you to sell the rest of it. And that's the money that was recycled to go back and purchase from the supplier. The standardized dealings that Bew testified that usually when he was selling to the dealers, and it was 2.25 ounces of cocaine to 4.5 ounces of cocaine, that there was always phone calls about the initial needing the money to buy the cocaine, that the cocaine was fronted to Fuller on credit, and that the money that Fuller paid was used to buy again. And that's the standardized dealings. That's what's happening in this case. And that mutual level of trust that Bew fronted the cocaine to Fuller. He trusted that Fuller was going to pay him back. That Fuller trusted Bew to go into his private stash house if Bew ran out of his own supply. And that Fuller trusted Bew to count the money correctly. There was a phone call where Fuller thought he paid $1,800, and indeed, Fuller actually paid $1,900, and Bew told him and gave him credit for the extra $100. They were working together over those 4.5 months. Defense counsel argues about that inner circle. There was evidence that Bew had other people that he was working with and that those are the people that he trusted to go see the suppliers. But as far as the actual relationships amongst the co-conspirators, that doesn't mean that Fuller was not a part of this conspiracy. Fuller joined it. He knew that Bew was getting the cocaine and distributing it back out, and Fuller joined that. And that's the key factor. And as far as the trust and whether or not Fuller was knew about the diluted cocaine, well, this wasn't a single time, a single transaction where Bew didn't care about whether or not Fuller ever came back to him. Bew cared about Fuller and his customers. And even though it was being diluted, He was still checking to make sure that the customers liked the cocaine and whether or not he can do anything better or more at a later time. All these factors show that the jury could rationally conclude that a conspiracy existed, and that's exactly what they did. Thomas and Rivera are completely distinguishable on their facts. And as in Thomas and Rivera, both of these did not include any sales or credit or fronting. They all were cash on demand. So there was no interlocking or shared stake where the broker or the supplier, broker and Thomas or the supplier and Rivera, were relying upon the buyers to recycle the money to go back and buy more, which is the facts that we have here. And that's why they don't apply to this analysis. The jury did find in a special verdict form that there was this case involved, or that Fuller was responsible for 500 grams or more of cocaine. And that is the finding based upon Bue's testimony, Bue's estimate, as well as the cooperative wiretaps. And that's the driving force of what happened at the sentencing. We ask that this court affirm Fuller's conviction and sentence.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. How much time does Mr. Kaplan have? He has his time has expired. Well, Mr. Kaplan, we'll give you a minute. You have something you'd like to say?
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I'll be brief. In every opinion that this court hands down in which a conspiracy conviction is challenged, it carefully and methodically sets out two things: the multi-factor test and the rationale for the harsh punishments for conspiratorial activity. In this case, there was no group activity. There was no gangs, no dangerousness, no weapons, no cooperation, and no trust. No partnership, and therefore, there was no conspiracy. We ask that this court overturn the conviction on behalf of our client. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kaplan. Mr. Kaplan, you serve by appointment to the court, and you have the deep thanks of the court for your fine efforts on behalf of your client. We thank you and your law firm for the expenditure of time and resources that was put into this matter. We thank counsel for the government as well, and the case is taken under advisement. The court has completed the call of the day, and so the court will rise until the next scheduled oral argument.